Welcome to the Wild Expansion Podcast. This podcast is an invitation for you to dive deep into getting to know yourself a little bit more. This podcast will help you on your journey of feeling more calm, confident, and at ease. Learn tips and techniques to help you on your journey of wildly expanding into your most true self. So welcome to the Wild Expansion Podcast, Kaylee. Kaylee is a beautiful lady from Dublin who I met in India whenever we were both training to do our yoga teacher training. I really admired Kaylee's approach to life and yoga. You always studied really hard. You were so interested in learning about the philosophy, the autonomy. You know, you really did treat this art with such respect. So is there anything you'd like to add on to that?
Oh, God, I don't know. It was just actually just really interesting hearing you say all those things. And you mentioned about truth, and that was actually a big part of the teacher trainer for me. I don't know if you remember the time was Roshan, our philosophy teacher, spoke a lot about truth and speaking your truth and just being in your truth. And it was just interesting to hear you describe those things about me. Yeah, thanks. I don't know. Yeah, I suppose maybe the conversation will make me explain more about myself as we go on, but there's nothing I'd like to add to it now, I suppose. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, no, perfect. Like, what drew you to go to India to do yoga in the first place?
Yeah, I'd been doing quite a lot of yoga before I signed up to Anthem. I was just, I don't know if I was addicted to it, but I was like craved it all the time. I'd been going to loads of classes. And it was actually my husband said to me that I should do a teacher training. And I was like, oh my God, there's no way I could teach people how to do yoga. Not a hope. Like, standing up in front of people, like, just wasn't on the radar. Like, no way I could do anything like that. And I was in a job that wasn't going to be long term. I just couldn't see myself staying there long term. It was, you know, paid the bills and it was fine. It was a good job. But it just wasn't what I wanted to be doing. And eventually I was like, okay, right, I'll do this teacher training. And I think so many people go into teacher trainings with this mindset. I don't have to teach afterwards. I'll just see how it goes. You know, I'll just do the training for myself, for my own practice, to deepen my knowledge, and then I'll see what happens afterwards. But honestly, as soon as I started the course, I was like, I knew I was going to teach it. I think it was probably the first day I was like, oh no, I can do this. Like, it was just, it was a big thing. But why I chose India was, I kind of had the mindset, well, if you were going to learn about Irish dancing, where would you go? Mm-hmm. You know, people around the world would come to Ireland. You know, there's lots of different places. You know, you can do lots of different Irish dancing in America, England, everywhere, you know. But it kind of makes sense to go to the home of it. And that's what I wanted to do. So, and I'm so glad I did. It was one of the best experiences I've ever had.
What is it about India that you were most, I don't know, transformed by or that impacted you the most?
Oh, there was, I don't think I could pin it to one thing. India was a real eye-opener for me. I'd never been there before. And because people ask me, did I travel on my own? And I did in a way, but I never really felt I was on my own because the course that we signed up for, the training we signed up for, kind of helped us to be introduced to other people that were traveling on the same days and stuff. So we had a kind of a, I was able to meet two other girls in the airport and we traveled together. So I never really felt that I was properly alone, but but I was with people I didn't know at the same time, if that makes sense. Everything in India was just so very different to what it's like here in Ireland. The population is huge. It was just people everywhere. There's so much about it that was maybe a little bit overwhelming to begin with. You know, just the amount of people, the busyness, the noises, the colors, the spices, the smells of spices and things, you know. But really, when we were doing the teacher training, I think one of the biggest things was the people that I met in Rishikesh, like the people in the shops, in the village, the people on the stalls. Like, you could literally just sit and, because we mentioned, didn't we, before we started recording, I don't know if it was before you start recording, but we just mentioned about like deep conversation and no surface level. Yeah. Like, you could just go into a shop to buy a notebook or, you know, whatever, and have the most profound conversations with strangers, and just the deepest spiritual, or it didn't even have to be spiritual, but just really amazing conversations. I think it was, you know, the people that was the biggest, you know, was where I got the biggest lessons, maybe, just how they lived yoga. And it wasn't necessarily, they may not have called it yoga, but it was just the culture, I suppose, and the way they lived their life and the way they treated other people. Mm-hmm. Was a big lesson for me. It was really beautiful.
Do you think you were on like your spiritual journey before India, or do you think India really brought a lot to the surface that you didn't realize?
I probably thought I was on a spiritual journey before that, but wasn't. You know, practicing yoga here, I did have eye openers to things. You know, just I think the amount of yoga that I was doing, and I was going to different workshops, and you know, just really trying to learn as much as I could, because it was the only, I suppose, at the time when I started yoga, it was a hobby, you know, something to kind of do after work or whatever. And it was the only hobby that I ever got passionate about, you know. I did have different kind of eye openers when I was practicing here, and then, but then when I went to India, it was like this whole other level. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, and I think that can happen anywhere. I think teacher trainings will do that for you. Mm-hmm. Any, or even yoga retreats, any space where you get to really spend time away from your everyday life, and just time with yourself and really looking and exploring. I've never had that time. Mm-hmm. I did a yoga retreat before that, but I don't think I understood the practice as much. Mm-hmm. As I did when I started the teacher training. And yeah, that time to just explore myself, I suppose, was really interesting. I explored lots of different things that I didn't expect, I suppose.
And then the real work really begins whenever you come back home from living in that bubble and you do the interview. Uh-huh. So could you talk us through like what helped you integrate back into normal society and continue pursuing that path of, you know, really finding out more about yourself in India?
Yeah, well, Roshan said that to us as well, didn't he? That he said that he often noticed that people kind of have a culture shock when they arrive in India, but then they have a culture shock when they go back home as well, because, you know, you just get so into this way of living, because we were there for a month. And then, you know, it was, yeah, you just get used to this way of living on this teacher training and surrounded by people that are on the same wavelength as you and having these wonderful conversations. And mm-hmm. and then you got to go home and get up and go to work in the morning and all this sort of stuff. Now, I was very lucky because I went, I traveled in Asia for, I think it was about 6 or 7 weeks maybe after the training. So that was, you know, I did have that space in between that I was still traveling, and, you know, a lot of the lessons that I took on in the teacher training were able to kind of sink in. Mm-hmm. And then I came home, and it was just before Christmas. So it was December time in Ireland, after coming from the most gorgeous sunny beaches in Asia and then arriving back to Dublin in the middle of winter, and just the cold and the dark nights. Oh, it was really hard. And I know that's terrible. That actually, no, such a hard life, like, you know, after traveling for so long, you know. But yeah, just to settle back into things felt a bit difficult. I was like, oh, I just want to be traveling all my life, and I don't want to, you know, come back into this routine. But I did. And yeah, it was strange, I suppose, but I just kept with the practices of yoga, you know. And yeah, I just tried to keep as much of the lessons that I'd taken, and tried to bring them home with me. And again, it's difficult because on the teacher training, of course, you've like 2 hours practice in the morning, 2 hours in the evening. You know, you're not going to fit that into your daily life. But you know, I did fit a good practice in pretty much every morning anyway, you know, and I was much more structured and disciplined, you know, after the teacher training. Yeah, I suppose I don't think my practices are as disciplined and structured now, but you know, I did have that good routine, I suppose. Well, just a different routine, not necessarily that it was good or bad, but it was just different to what it is now. Mm-hmm. So I just used that, and I used, I think because it was probably so cleansing in a way, if that makes sense. You know, I was able to spend that time, that month in India, just clearing everything that needed to be cleared, you know, and then I came back feeling a bit lighter as well. So things didn't get on top of me as much as they would have before, like stress of work and things like that didn't get to me as much as they would have before.
So what were your key lessons that you took home with you from India?
Again, just I think the really sticking with the practice of yoga, like it's, you know, the showing up for the practice. Mm-hmm. You know, that was definitely one. If you just keep with the practice, it does help. It helps everything in our life, I find anyway. Gosh, feels like so long ago now.
What lessons does yoga teach you?
Oh yeah, a lot. What lessons do yoga teach me? I suppose it depends on different times of my life and stuff. It has shown me that I am strong, and that I am, you know, able to do things that I might not have necessarily thought I was able to do. But it's also taught me to be gentle with myself. And to take it easy with myself, you know, that it doesn't have to always be this forceful, disciplined practice. You know, the kindness and the compassion and the softness is just as important. Yeah. And I suppose balance. Everything is about balance, you know. We try to balance our chakras. We try to balance our mind. Everything is about balance. So, you know, no matter what you're talking about, I mean, diet is about balance. You know, it's okay to have a little slice of cake, but you know, cake every day and like a full thing of cake every day is not necessarily so good. But yeah, I just, you know, I really think I realize that balance is key.
What sort of advice do you have for someone who struggles to live a life in balance? Perhaps they're going down a road and feel off balance in some chakras. Do you have any strategies you try to implement to just feel more aligned?
Well, I suppose awareness is probably the first thing, isn't it? Like, just being aware of where you do feel unbalanced. Because, and I probably went through a lot of my life like this, you know, just being unaware of, oh, actually, I wasn't feeling so good at that time. Or, you know, actually, that did upset me. But, you know, we can cover up so much and we can ignore so much. That actually, when you start to be aware of these things, it's usually not very easy to become aware of them and actually realize these things about yourself. It can usually be very uncomfortable or difficult to realize some things about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, awareness, and that awareness probably comes through creating space and time for yourself. You know, sitting in meditation. Even if it's just, you know, because I know we've all got busy lives and stuff, so even if it's just a couple of minutes a day, to just sit and give yourself time to, yeah, acknowledge what's happening, like, how am I feeling today? You know, it doesn't have to be heading off to India for months, you know. it's really just creating any little bit of space and time in your day that you can. What was the question again? I feel like I'm rambling off there.
Do you have any like practices or rituals you do daily maybe to feel more in balance if you do feel
So creating that space and time, and then about bringing balance, and then, so like, I started off like really, really wanting to know so everything about yoga. I'm so just inquisitive and like, how does this work? How do we do this? What does that work? So it is important that if you have a yoga practice or even through meditation or whatever your practice is, you know, to understand how it works. But more recently then, because I've kind of got this, the foundation and how things work, then I feel like I can, you know, really use my intuition around that as well. You know, so again, it's a balance of the intuition, but also the knowledge of how things work.
Mm-hmm.
How the body works, how the energy works, how the mind works, and using my intuition, like, what do I need, and listen to that little voice in the back of my head, maybe, you know, that's whispering, you need a little bit more of this, or you need a little bit more of that, you know. So so again, yeah, the balance of understanding certain practices, but listening to myself as well, I find important.
And what's lovely there, Katie, is that it seems that you have cultivated this like compassionate inner voice where you're asking yourself, what do you need? What do you want? So it's really, you know, instead of having just an inner critic creating a soft voice.
Yeah. I definitely have found over the last, probably since the start of all these lockdowns and stuff, it's definitely increased. But even before that, it was very interesting looking more at the feminine aspects of practices, you know, because I started teaching yin yoga and even practices like Reiki and things like that, I think probably a bit more feminine. And just, because yoga in all the different ways of practicing yoga has its purpose, but we can get very structured and overly regimental with it sometimes as well, you know. I think, yeah, again, I'm gonna just keep coming back to balance. We can overdo it sometimes with being too much in the masculine, maybe too much power yoga or whatever it is, you know. I just think the softer practices have a huge, you know, we need to, well, from a personal aspect anyway, and I've seen it in a lot of my students and people I talk to, we really need to invite in the softer, more compassionate, you know, it might even mean more rest, you know.
Yeah.
Like, do less.
I love that. I love it, especially in Ireland. Like, do this. Just how many hours you work and how hard you grind your whole life.
And it still feels uncomfortable for me. Like, I like to be, I like to be not even so much active, but I like to feel productive. I like to feel like I'm doing something in the world, you know? So to actually stop sometimes and do nothing is really difficult. It's, you know, yeah, it's hard to just stop and to rest and to incorporate these feminine qualities, because the world in itself, you know, our societies are quite the masculine is usually rewarded more. You know, work harder and you'll get paid more. You know, so but we do need to incorporate the feminine in a lot of aspects in our life as well.
I think as a female too, like our hormones, our feminine, masculine hormones are constantly changing throughout the month. So it's allowing yourself to maybe, you know, grind one week and then chill the next, or just listen to your body and not being not being productive all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So I, again, like all the lockdowns and everything, I got the chance to do lots of different kind of online courses and to study new avenues, I suppose. And a big part of, like, it's changed so much for my practices is studying like menstrual cycle awareness, and really connecting into our natural cycles. Because again, it's like society kind of has this structure that doesn't necessarily fit with a body that has a menstrual cycle. You know, it's the structure of the daily, you're expected to act and do the same every day, be as productive today as you will be in 2 weeks' time. And actually that doesn't necessarily suit a body that menstruates. So that really, really taught me a lot. And it was with all aspects of life. So I've really incorporated it into my yoga practices and things like that. But just in every aspect of life, in running my business, in when I kind of schedule in social events, you know, all these things have an effect on us. So yeah, hormones are very, very interesting, how they work and how we can connect them. So yeah, so cycles are a huge part of kind of what I do now.
I have a friend who's like a coach, life coach, and on the week of her bleed, she will say, no, sorry, can't meet up with you, can't schedule anything. And she creates her work and productivity around the day she knows she's, I don't know what. Would you actually mind describing the cycle and what you should do during each stage?
So again, it's quite different for everybody, you know. So I suppose what I'll explain is like the average menstrual cycle, you know, which is on average 28 days, but some people have a shorter cycle, some people have a longer cycle, and that's normal. So it's kind of just taking this information and fitting it around your cycle, making it fit you. If we start with the menstrual phase, and what I'll do is connect these to the seasons. So that's how I learned it, is when we connect it to the seasons, because you can look outside and see what way the seasons are acting. And it's a really good way to connect and just to understand how the cycle works. So if we start with the menstrual phase, this is like when you start bleeding. This is equivalent to winter. So like you said, that your friend, you know, she doesn't want to see anyone, you know, she takes more time for herself. And that's kind of what we want to do in winter, is like maybe snuggle up a little bit more, you know, hibernate a little bit. You know, you naturally probably won't feel like you want to be out in the world so much. So it's really kind of, it's a really deep feminine time, like the really embracing the darkness. So. Yeah, that's usually like 5 to 7 days long. Again, it depends on your cycle. It's different for everybody. And then we start to emerge into the spring phase. So after the menstrual phase has passed, we'll start to feel a little lighter in ourselves. So I think most people that have a menstrual cycle probably can relate to this. So in the menstrual phase, you probably feel a little bit more tired. You know, there might be like cramps and things like that, that just, or you might feel a little bit more irritable, that type of thing. And that usually passes then coming into the spring phase. So when we look at into nature again, the transitions between seasons are quite slow and subtle. So spring is starting to arise. And what's happening in the body here is estrogen is gently starting to rise as well. But there's kind of like this little phase that we feel like, oh, I'm in spring, let's go, you know.
Yeah.
Actually, we just have to really try and tune into that slow progression into the change of seasons. And if, yeah, I'll explain that at the end. So, okay, I'll keep going. The spring then obviously comes towards summer, and summer is our ovulation phase. So this is the phase where your body is preparing to get pregnant, whether that's, you know, in your plans or not, that's what your body is preparing to do. So estrogen levels are higher, which is usually why we feel a little bit more energetic. If things are in balance, you know, I'm describing a menstrual cycle if everything is in balance, yeah? So often people don't feel good in their ovulation phase because maybe something is a little off balance. But if everything is the balance, you'll probably feel more social. You know, you like to surround yourself with more people. And if you think about it in terms of summer, you know, the land is in full bloom, you know. The leaves are on the trees, the wildflowers are, you know, gorgeous everywhere. And this is kind of what we can feel like in our body as well. So usually like your skin can have that bit of extra glow. I always find my hair is just much easier to do on these days.
Yeah.
it just sits right when, you know, for those few days. And again, it's all to do with the level of hormones and things like that. And again, it's kind of your body's way of preparing for a potential pregnancy, you know. And so there's even like our cervical fluids and things are different at this phase as well. And then we come towards autumn then, and this is probably the phase that is most difficult for a lot of people. So autumn phase, as we transition through it, can be where like PMS shows up, so like cramps, irritability, and this is really where our inner critic, it can be very big. So this is why I wanted to speak to you today on the podcast, okay? So I'm actually in my ovulation phase.
Uh-huh.
Whereas if I was to speak to you next week, I might not feel as confident, or, you know, I could have that voice in the back of my head and might be a bit louder going, you're not good enough to be on a podcast, or, you know, this kind of inner critic voice is very common in this phase. So yeah, that's why I was eager to speak to you today rather than next week.
I love it.
So, you know, once we start to know our cycle, and so this is why we, like, if we track our cycle, and I have a menstrual cycle calendar that also connects to the moon phases on my website that you can download.
Okay.
If anyone's interested in just kind of tracking their cycle, and there's literally writing one or two words every day about how am I feeling today. So if day one is the day that your period starts, so when you start to bleed is day one, and then the last day is the day before your next period. So once you start to track your cycle and you start to see patterns,
mm-hmm.
you can start to incorporate this stuff in your life. So it might take a couple of months to actually kind of get a hold of what's happening, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start to see those patterns like that, you can go, okay, well, if I'm going to do something like a podcast, it'll be a good time to do it during ovulation rather than maybe when the inner critic is a bit louder or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And like I said, if so there's certain things that are recommended. You know, like winter phase, a little bit more rest is needed. And that's something you'll naturally probably feel in your body. You know, you want to maybe take a little bit more time in bed or snuggled up or whatever. And then when we move into spring phase, you can start to kind of up the tempo. Say if we're talking in terms of exercise or yoga practice or something, you can go with stronger practices as you start to move from spring to summer. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so if you're following these kind of rhythms, these natural rhythms, things will start to become more in balance. But if you're fighting against them, so if you are doing like a spin class on day one of your cycle,
yeah,
ovulation might be a bit more uncomfortable for you. So it might not necessarily, the discomforts and the imbalances might not necessarily show up there and then.
Yeah,
but they might show up 2 weeks down the road in your cycle, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So there's so much of this. I could yap about this all day. There's so much I could speak to, but it's changed so much for me. And again, it's incorporating the feminine, the cyclical patterns of nature.
Yeah.
And not fighting against that cycle.
Yeah.
Just going with the flow of it as opposed to fighting against it, you know?
Usually, like, I'm in spring right now, and right now I feel so much love for everyone. Mm. My partner, my friends, family, like, so much love. But I notice it must be in autumn or whatever. There's some times throughout the month where everyone irritates me. Mm-hmm. I'm so cold and closed off, and I don't like that part of me, but we just have to, like, embrace it and be like, this is temporary, it's normal. It's mm-hmm. hard though, isn't it? Like, just feeling like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is why I think it's really important that everybody understands this work. You know, not just menstruators, but everybody. So if you have a man that's a partner, and, you know, they might not necessarily, I mean, I'm sure they know what periods are, but I mean, I didn't know so much of this stuff up until like 2 years ago. So like, why would most men know about it? Do you know that kind of way?
Yeah.
But once everybody starts to learn about it, we can start to be, just more compassionate with each other and realize, okay, well, her inner critic is quite big now, so maybe we don't do such and such an activity, or, you know, there's more understanding mm-hmm. around it once everybody starts to understand what's happening rather than, oh, it's just her period, like.
Yeah. and what about, like, do you notice effects of the moon? Isn't there a saying, I could be wrong, completely correct me if I am, is it like if your menstruation is in sync with the full moon, you are like healing others, whereas if it's a new moon, you're doing inner healing? Is that wrong?
I'll be honest with you, I don't know too much. You know, there's lots of different sayings like that, and I'm sure there's lots of wisdom behind it all. I use the moon as a guide. You know, I think we can put a lot of emphasis on trying to synchronize ourselves with the moon, mm-hmm. but we're all so individual, we're all so different, that I just use it as a guide. So I'm not trying to imitate the moon, but I'm just looking at her for inspiration as such. You know, the moon goes through her phases and does her thing, and they're similar to mine, but I don't need to connect 100% to it. You know what I mean? I don't need to because it's not going to happen. I don't have to bleed on the new moon, or I don't have to ovulate on the full moon. Some people do, some people don't. You know, we're all different. I just think the moon is there for lessons for us. You know, we don't have to synchronize, because it, like when I spoke about the seasons connecting to our menstrual phase, the moon can do the same. So the new moon, where the moon is dark, where we can't see it, there's no light in the sky, this is similar to our menstrual phase, where things are a bit darker, there's not as much that high energy, whereas the full moon is similar to our ovulation phase. It's full, it's big, you know, energy is a little bit higher, similar to ovulation. But for me, I don't put too much emphasis on if I bleed on a new moon or not. You know, it's just getting those little lessons from the moon, that's all.
I never thought about that before, how like the moon can hide during a full moon and just show a little sliver of itself. Just hide.
So yeah, it's like the slow transitions of the seasons. Like the moon just doesn't go from dark to full. You know, there's a slow progression in between, and that's how our menstrual cycle can be as well, a slow progression from menstruation to ovulation and back around again.
Have you ever heard of or used ashwagandha powder as a supplement?
No, I'm intrigued.
So it's like an adaptogen from India. Obviously, it's not.
I have heard of it, but you go ahead and explain, because I still don't really know what it is.
So no, I don't know that much, but basically, I've always struggled with hormonal imbalance with my thyroid, and I've always felt just, you know, out of line. And I started supplementing an ashwagandha in my smoothies and stuff. It's meant to balance the feminine and masculine, and I've noticed such a difference.
So, yeah. There's so much. There really is so much out there now, especially. And there's so many like menstrual cycle coaches and just people who have knowledge on the cycles and different aspects. So, you know, you'll have people that recommend certain diets for certain phases. You know, I'm really trying to stick to how yoga can complement our cycle, whereas other people will be more focused on exercise. You know, there's all these different things. Only more recently that have come to light, you know, it was quite very hidden up until recently. But yeah, it's great to see more and more out there now.
It's nice just having, a bit of structure to understand what's going on in our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's it was just so eye-opening to me. The more I was learning about this, I was like going, how did I not know about this? How did I not know that, you know, there's a reason why I feel cranky before my period? Yeah. You know, it's my hormonal levels are changing. You know, and there's a reason why I feel great at a certain time of the month. There's a reason why I don't feel so great at a certain time of the month. It's natural, like it's, but yeah, just all these different things about it. I was actually, to be honest, I was quite angry when I started hearing about things. I was angry that nobody told me about it. Just realized then that, you know, there's no point in staying in that anger, that, you know, I can share this information now. And luckily going forward, more and more people can start to learn about it as well.
Yeah. What are some like releases you would do for anger?
Oh, yeah. And that's a great question. And something I probably struggle with, anger, because it's very uncomfortable to feel angry. You know, so I often would just push anger to the side and go, nah, it doesn't matter. you know, and it's not worth getting angry about and pushing it to the side and then moving on. But with like any other emotion, it gets stored in our body if we don't release it in the right way. So yeah, there's some great things. Like yin yoga is great for getting really deep into certain parts of the body. So there's different things we can do in yin yoga, like connecting into the meridian line for the liver. And I find as well, any kind of fiery practices in yoga, like trying to, just get into the solar plexus all around the abdomen. Again, it's connected to the liver, because that's where we store our anger, is in the liver. But just trying to use, it depends as well. So there's the yin and the yang, you know, it depends on what you need. For me, it's usually I need to actually allow myself to feel the anger. So I find stronger, fierier practices more beneficial to allow me to feel the anger so I can release it. Some people will need to cool their anger slightly, so then the yin yoga might be more beneficial to them. So again, it depends on the person and what's the best way to approach it is. But as well, I love there's a practice I did in Kundalini class. And I don't know what it's called actually, but it was basically banging the floor and chanting at the same time. you know, that kind of thing where you can really just express your anger, I suppose, in a controlled way, and just allow it to rise up. Again, you know, it's creating this space because our anger, of course, can come out in uncomfortable situations that we don't necessarily want to do. It can usually come out at the people that we're closest to, and they're not the people that we're angry with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just finding the space and time to kind of figure out what is the anger, who are we angry with, how can we and often how can we transform it, you know, how can we transform it into passion,
yes,
or you know, like power to go get up and change something that you're angry with or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a very general answer. I don't know if I give you one specific tool, but it's just so personal to everybody.
I love anger because it's like it shows you what you're frustrated about, so you can learn to make a change so you're living more in alignment with your values, or doesn't it exposes your truth.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, if you do use that anger, the feeling afterwards can be really powerful, just, you know. I suppose one thing that I did, I feel a little bit silly sharing this, but anyway. So last year when there was a lot in the news about the mother and baby homes,
mm-hmm.
And I was never personally affected by any of this, but just hearing the stories made me so angry.
Yeah.
You know, it just really kind of disgusted me, so many of the stories that came out about how people, women, babies and men were treated in these mothers and babies homes. And so there was something on the news and I couldn't even sleep. It was just on my mind. I was like so angry at everything. It's terrible. So this was during lockdown as well. So you weren't allowed to travel more than 5K or whatever. So the next morning I got up and I went, right, well, I can't go and protest outside a government building. So I actually made a sign and I stood outside the church on my own. And I just said, "Survivors, we stand with you." And it was really going, I have to do something.
Yes.
And I was like going, I'm not going to change anything. I'm not going to, like, nobody's probably going to take any notice of me. Like, it's not as if I'm, hosting a big march down the middle of Dublin, like, but it was just, I had to do something. Otherwise, it was like my insides were going to erupt. So, it calmed it then, you know. Afterwards, I felt like, okay, it was transformed in some way.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'll share something as well, if you don't mind.
Of course.
Anger. So, like, yeah, I love what you're saying there. Completely alchemizing anger to show what you're passionate about and, you know, make the world a bit better.
Mm.
If you can. I used to, this is like, okay, it's going to be so vulnerable here, but like from yoga, I was like, I just have to be the positive person all the time.
Mm.
I wouldn't allow myself to get anger. Mm. And if the thought came up, I would never share it with anyone. I would suppress, numb out, just not feel it, not good. And then it's only recently I'm really allowing myself to get anger. And instead of just being the positive friend, telling people, you know what, I'm really effing pissed off right now, and this is why.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, that's a release itself, isn't it? Sharing it, getting it out, and then looking at what it is that's making you anger, and then reflect it back to yourself. So it's like, right, what is this teaching me about me?
Mm-hmm.
And brought up that I had this limiting belief that basically scared of rejection and scared of success. Mad. So it's such a gift, and it's really now fueled me to like overcome that and be like, well, I'm gonna do it anyway.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And you said there about kind of talking to people and telling them you're angry.
Yeah.
And I think boundaries and things like that are have a big place here as well, you know, because we can often be angry because someone has done something, but actually, but had we put boundaries in place,
mm-hmm.
or had we kind of, you know, because maybe the person that we're angry at wasn't aware that that would make us angry, you know?
Yeah,
and I love Brené Brown speaks a lot about boundaries. She has really good talks about boundaries. It's, you know, kind of a game changer when you can put your boundaries in place.
Yeah, with like people and like organizing events and things. Yeah,
exactly. And as well in terms of organizing events and things, I suppose when you talk about limiting beliefs, like I struggled a lot with kind of how much should I charge for certain things, or you know, again, trying to find that balance of I want to make things accessible for people, but at the same time, I have to earn a living, and I've, you know, put so much of myself into this. I've put my time, I've studied, you know, all these things I'm putting into it. So, so a boundary could be like making sure that you're receiving as well as given, you know what I mean? So you give out so much to these events and things, but making sure that you're not being just completely depleted.
Yes. It's that balance again. You need both in order to
balance. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That was me. I thought I had to be the giver all the time. Giving love and support and not allowing myself to be held with any uncomfortable emotions. Whereas whenever you share, you're receiving that, you know, support and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I learned that from a lot of the Reiki courses I did. You know, obviously Reiki is to do with energy, and a lot of the teachings were, you know, you don't give Reiki for free.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're being depleted, you mm-hmm. know, and money is just an exchange of energy, you know. And of course you can of course work out things where, okay, I'll do this for you and then you do that for me. Again, it's just the exchange of energy. It doesn't have to be money. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing something for free all the time, you're just going to be depleted.
Yeah.
And you might feel like at the start, I'm being a really good person and I'm generous and I'm giving, but you have to look after yourself.
Mm.
You know, there's no other way around that. Like, you have to look after yourself first. Otherwise, eventually you're not going to be any good to anyone else.
Right. And I think also, if you don't treat yourself with enough respect, you attract them sort of people who will take advantage of you.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so absolutely. And then it comes back to setting those boundaries, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then that way you actually attract your ideal clients in, and you know, the people you want in your life.
Yeah absolutely.
Like, I right now, Katie, I have no time for toxic people, or like, you know, I just cut them right out. I don't even care.
It's easier, I think, when you start to learn things like that. It's easier to just kind of walk away from people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the toxic kind of thing. And because I kind of had the thing of thinking, what if I'm nice to them, and you know, maybe they'll kind of catch on to the niceness or something. And but it's like anything, you can't force anyone else into like doing yoga and becoming positive or whatever. You know, they have to find their own way around it. They'll, you know, they may come around, may not come around, but you don't have to be dragged down with them. Like,
yeah. And not like trying to control people to make them change and read the book. It's just depletes our energy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's it. Coming back to our teacher training, I remember Roshan saying about that, because, you know, especially after you do a teacher training, you're so excited about yoga. Oh my God, wait, I'll tell you what I learned. I have to show you how to do this. And, you know, you're just like dragging everyone to your yoga classes. But it's like, he was there going, you know, a lot of people won't be interested. They don't want to know about your yoga. They don't want to know about, you know, whatever. So if, because, you know, you see someone who's maybe gone through some of the things that you went through, and you're like, oh, yoga helped me get through that. I just want to help them. But it doesn't work that way. And he said, like, a good thing to do is maybe leave a book down beside them.
I always think of that exact thing that he
said. Yeah. Just leave it there as a little nudge, and then maybe they'll read it, and then maybe they'll start to get curious about it. But it's just, you know, planting little seeds, but never trying to, like, force anything, you know. You just have to accept that.
Yeah.
Everyone will just choose their own path, like, but, yeah.
You can't say, you must do this.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, I learned that pretty quick. But you just get so excited. You're like, oh my God, I found this amazing thing. Everyone has to do it.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Like, whenever I was vegan, I'm vegetarian, but I eat fish. I remember I first was vegan. You know, you take it out on everyone. You're like, how dare you eat meat? How dare you? It's like, no.
Yeah.
But you were so.
I know. Yeah. I know. It's, it's passion, isn't it? Like, you just. Yeah. You get passionate about something and you want everyone to know about it. And yeah.
Although there is people that we can't escape who are toxic, and they're probably in our life to teach us lessons, so that people we work with or family. Do you have any tips to help, you know, protect your own energy whenever you are around people?
Yeah, I suppose. And again, it was actually a lot through Reiki that I learned these kind of techniques is, you know, really just visualizing that you're covering yourself in a bubble. And some of these sound a bit daft, like, but they've really worked for me, you know, like visualizing that you're covering yourself in this energetic bubble, and that kind of like their energy can't get at you. And you know, if you have been around people and it feels a bit overwhelming afterwards, just kind of wiping yourself down as if you're brushing their energy off you. Mm-hmm. And even just like washing your hands after it, or having a shower is a great thing, you know. Yeah. Or even just washing your hands and literally watching the water go down the drain, and just kind of, even if you create some sort of a mantra like, I release, I let go, and this type of thing. But actually, that's something, because I used to work in a hairdresser's as a receptionist, and the odd time you'd have to wash hair for people and stuff. And I used to do that at the basins. So if you're having a stressful day or something, I would be at the basins, like, washing my energy down the drain, or washing other people's energy down the drain, I should say.
That's so good, yeah.
So yeah, water, and it probably comes back to the elements. It's like water is helping us to cleanse. Or just being out in the air, you know, let the breeze blow away any kind of attachments that people have left on you.
Isn't just incredible how, like, we have earth elements and they literally are free, abundant, and they help heal us and give us balance.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Just being out in nature, like, changes so much. Mm. You know, and anyone who's not into any type of wellness type things or anything that sounds anyway hippy dippy or anything, you know, those people will agree that if you're feeling stressed, just going for a walk will help.
Yeah. You don't need to explain,
just clear your head.
Yeah You don't need to explain the science, at least just notice how you feel and everyone
exactly
loves.
yeah
And also speak, Katie, that you like study the Celtic wheel a bit. Would you mind like just giving a wee into that?
Yeah, so I'm nearly at the end of the course. So it's a year long, and Mary Kennedy, oh, she's amazing. So the Celtic wheel is very much to do with the seasons that I spoke about earlier on, you know, really connecting to nature and to ourselves. And I suppose I find it so interesting because just everything that I did over the lockdown, the different things that I, and I say in air quotes, randomly kind of found, like the menstrual cycle awareness, the Celtic wheel, they all just gelled together so well. I didn't plan it that way. It just, all these things started coming at me and I happened to do them in the best way ever. So yeah, Mary Kennedy does the Celtic Wheel. So she'll be starting a new cycle at the end of October, Samhain, Halloween. So if anyone's interested in the Celtic Wheel, look her up. She's amazing. And the Celtic Wheel, again, is about connecting into the different seasons and the festivals on the Celtic calendar. Excuse me. So it's the way that we used to celebrate the seasons in Ireland, in Scotland, in England and Wales, in all the kind of Celtic places, and slightly different traditions in different places and stuff. But when the Druids were here, when the poets were, everyone loved the poets and stuff. So basically there's 8 festivals on the Celtic Wheel, and it starts with Samhain, which is Halloween. And it's really interesting that it starts in Samhain because, so in the Celtic tradition, Samhain is our new year. And it's lovely that it starts in the darkness. So Halloween, Samhain is like the darkest time of the year, where everyone talks about at Halloween, there's like spirits and witches and ghouls and all that kind of dark stuff. But this is just kind of an animation of what the festival is really about. It's really about celebrating the dark feminine. And then again, there's all the different, I won't go through all of them. I think I'll just speak about Samhain because it's, not too far away from us. And it's really interesting that it starts there. The dark feminine, the goddess connected to Samhain is the Caillacht. So the witch, the Caillacht. There's a couple of different ways to pronounce it, depending on your Irish, I suppose. But the Caillacht is the witch or the old crone. Mm-hmm. So, she was, I suppose, portrayed in a negative light for a long time with the kind of the big nose and the wart on her face and the eating children and stuff, but really the goddess, the Caillacht, is she's the goddess of winter, and she is necessary, just like we need that time to rest maybe during our menstrual phase. There's times in our life as well that we can connect into that winter phase and that we need to rest. So this could be a time maybe like where we are going through something like grief or loss or just feeling down, and accepting that it's okay to feel those things. We don't have to live in the summer all the time. Mm-hmm. And actually we shouldn't live in the summer all the time. We shouldn't be, blooming and just out in the world and go, like winter and the Caillacht and the goddess all has its place, and it's necessary to rest so that we can bloom again on the next cycle, and the reason it's the new year starts in this really dark place is because everything starts in the feminine. So there's a lovely, it's from a song actually, there's a lovely kind of lyric. We are all brought forth out of darkness, in through the world, into the world through blood and through pain. That's how we're born, out of the dark womb and into the light. I just find it really interesting that the new year starts in the winter phase. And then the other, it goes on to celebrate spring. And in spring, we celebrate Imbolc, which is connected to the goddess Bridget, who was, most people know Saint Bridget, but she was actually a goddess before she was ever a saint. And a lot of these things, you know, there was goddesses and there were gods, and then kind of Christianity kind of came in and kind of changed some of the stories, or took some of the stories maybe, or, you know, to make it fit the Christian world. I celebrate spring, and then summer then is the Bieltne celebration, so big fires, and it's still celebrated in Uachtaráin. So Uachtaráin is the centre of Ireland, in Westmeath. It's a beautiful, if anyone has never been there, I highly recommend. It's such an amazing place. You can go there, I think it's like €15 for like a 2 or 3 hour tour of the place.
What is it exactly?
So Uachtaráin is a sacred site. There is, it's where like the High Kings, so we all know the Hill of Tara. I think that's probably one of the well-known ones, or Newgrange. And Uachtaráin is another one of these sites where High Kings used to sit and kind of decide what they were going to do, you know. And there's also, the most interesting thing I found about it was there is what's called a catstone. So it's a rock that was left over from the Ice Age. It's 12,000 years old.
Wow.
And it's said that the goddess Eru is buried beneath it. So Eru is the sovereignty goddess in Celtic mythology. And really interestingly, they said that lots of lots of leaders throughout the years would have met there to decide policies or decide what was happening in the country up as recently as like some of the leaders of the 1916 rising met there to kind of discuss what was going to happen, you know. And I would love to know, did they go there to connect to the goddess Eru and connect to the feminine and connect to the mother and all this type of stuff? I'm not sure if they did or not, but they knew it was a really kind of sacred and special place.
Yeah.
That's where the Bieltne fires are lit. And then you've the harvest festival of Lunasa. It's just again a connection that there's time for everything. There's a time and a place for everything. There's a time for the darkness, for resting, for nourishing ourselves, and then there's a time to go out into the world and to be creative, and there's time to harvest your crops and to, you know, appreciate life and things, you know. So it's a really, really just a lovely way of looking at things. And It's funny because when I was in India actually doing the teacher training, I heard so many of their stories and traditions and just the kind of philosophy around yoga and the history of India and stuff, and so much of it is really similar to the Celtic traditions. I was sitting there going, that sounds familiar, mm-hmm. you know? So I kind of felt like, looking back, I was kind of searching for something that I didn't know what I was looking for, you know. And I really kind of feel like this Celtic wheel has helped me to, you know, it was like there was something missing, and this has really helped me to connect to like my own land, like where I'm from, you know. I kind of went off to India looking for it, but actually came home and then found it.
Kidding.
And I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what I was looking for, but it just kind of soothes me to hear these stories and connect to, I suppose, my own culture.
I can relate to that so much. Mm. It's like we think everything in life that we aren't and is better than us is like in an exotic place outside of us, someone else, unattainable, far away. Whereas it's like within us, within our hearts, within our own land, we have so much healing.
Yeah.
You know, isn't it incredible?
Absolutely.
Being right at home the whole time.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't. And I don't know if I just wasn't looking in the right places or wasn't connected to the right people, but I didn't know any of this stuff. This was never, like, of course you learn stuff in school, but it, And if it probably just wasn't the right time for me, but, you know, because I wasn't interested in it then.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't presented in the same way either, because this has a very spiritual aspect to it.
Yeah.
You know, whereas in school it was facts about history, you know. So, yeah, it was the spiritual aspect that was missing for me. Mm-hmm. And I felt that I had to go away to find it. And I think I did have to go away to find it a bit, you know. But it probably made me appreciate then what I have here then a bit more when I did find it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are some ways you like connect with the goddesses of the different seasons of the Celtic Queen?
Yeah, so just again, I suppose embracing what they represent. So the Kaliach, you know, represents winter and deep rest. So if I'm connecting into that type of practice, so for, you know, when Samhain does come around, if I do a little ritual for myself, like I might bring in some of the, like create a little altar maybe with some of what's out in nature. So maybe some of the dead leaves that have fallen from the trees. You know, so yeah, I suppose because that winter phase does represent death, you know. So creating an altar with that type of thing and yeah, just creating the feeling of winter, I suppose, you know, maybe practicing yin yoga in a dark room with some candles. Whereas then if for Goddess Bridget, it's a little lighter, you know, that spring energy coming in, that, you know, because the Goddess Bridget is represents creativity and poetry and, you know, so maybe even trying to connect to my own creativity and, you know, writing down some words. Like, I'm not a poet by any stretch the imagination, but just maybe writing down some words and trying to connect into something like that. So yeah, just looking at the, and again, something like if there was an altar, you know, some of the spring flowers and things like that. So really connecting to nature and what's happening out in the land at this time. And for me, it's always about the intention, you know. Am I sure that when I connect to Goddess Bridget that she's sitting beside me? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, you know, but I'm invoking the energy of what she represents, you know. That makes sense?
It does.
Yeah.
It's so nice. So what are you currently doing to prepare yourself for Samhain? Is that what the next season is? Yeah.
Samhain, is it? Like Halloween? Yeah. That's okay. Yeah, so... Again, it's just so before Samhain, like we're in autumn now and the autumn equinox and everything, you know, would be celebrating the Celtic wheel as well. And, you know, I suppose this is a good time to kind of look back at the cycle that I've just come through, you know, because we get so busy and carry on and keep looking forward. You know, so this is probably a good time now to start looking back. Okay, what have we done over the last year? And this can be done with your menstrual cycle as well. You know, you can look back on what did you do over the last month or the last year, or you can do this over your lifetime. You know, there's just so many different cycles and things that we can go through. But if we were to look over the last year, you know, I'd look back and go, okay, well, I've done this and I've done this and I'm proud of this. And, you know, really kind of sitting in acknowledging where, you know, how far I've come or giving myself a pat on the back, you know. And then if there was any, I wouldn't call it criticism, but if there was anything that I feel that, okay, well, next cycle, maybe I'll try and improve on that, you know, but in a very non-judgmental way. So not like, not criticizing myself, but just acknowledging, okay, this might need to change going forward. Or again, if there's a little pat on the back, not going too far with that either, like going, you're amazing, you're great, right? You know, just keeping everything in check. But yeah, definitely looking back. And then preparing to surrender then for Samhain. Just let go. you know, deep rest, and surrendering into the darkness again. And then, you know, that's the start of it, then surrendering into the darkness, and then the spring comes around and there's new life and new creations and stuff. So it's just constant.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And it's a lovely time as well to have this conversation, you know, with the seasons of reflect and how far you've come and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone's starting to feel the real change now with autumn and stuff. And it's a beautiful time of the year.
Yeah. So I'll wrap up shortly. So two last questions for you.
Yeah.
What does wild expansion mean to you?
Wild expansion. Wow. So I recently just did a retreat, actually, called Wild Wellness. So wild to me means natural. So like going with the flow. Wild is just, it doesn't have to be like taking all your clothes off and going for a skinny dip, you know, can be. But wild for me is natural, just being who we are, allowing whatever is to be. And then expansion, I suppose, is growth, you know. I suppose, again, as we travel through these cycles, where can I have improvements? You know, what can I learn more about? What can I learn more about myself? How can I become better? How can I offer more, you know, just be more of service to the world? Yeah, I think that's, yeah.
And if you could have one message on a billboard for the whole world to see, what would it be?
Oh, wow. You know, I think I'd go back to Roshan, our philosophy teacher in India, because I use this at the end of my classes sometimes, and he always said, and I just, it just makes me always feel good, I love it. He always said, be kind to yourself, appreciate yourself, and take really good care of yourself.
So Katie, is there any exciting projects or anything that you're working on that you'd like to share?
I have a couple of things. I have a Tuesday night class here in Rohini. So that's like a traditional Hatha yoga practice that everyone is welcome to. And then on the 16th of October, I have a workshop, Seasons, Cycles, and Circles. So it's pretty much just about everything we've been talking about there. But it's basically for anyone looking to know how to incorporate yoga, or it's how to connect yoga to their menstrual cycle. We'll also be incorporating Ayurvedic practices as well. And it's just a way to learn how to live more in sync with your cycle. It's open to menstruators, but also people who don't menstruate who would like to have a more cyclical life. So we can also, you know, we say that if you don't cycle with the womb, you can cycle with the moon. So again, it's just connecting to these life cycles, menstrual cycles, that type of thing. So that's the 16th of October as well. And everything's on my website anyway, yogaenergywithkatie.com, or on Instagram, the same, yogaenergywithkatie.
Okay, I'll link all of them on the show notes.
Perfect, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Katie.
So that is it for this week's podcast episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it. Knowledge is power, but the real work now is integration. So perhaps just spending 10 minutes journaling or meditating on what your key takeaways are from this week's episode and what changes you are going to make to your life. So you could tag Katie and myself on Instagram if you are passionate about this podcast and want to share it on your stories. That would be amazing. We would really appreciate it. And also just write what your key takeaways are. So all of Katie's details are linked in the show notes, and I'd love to hear your feedback about the podcasts. What are you enjoying about them? Do you like the background music during the episode or not, do let me know. I'm always open for criticism so I can improve these episodes and make them as powerful as possible for you. So thank you so much and have an amazing week.